Hi, this is Dan Sheridan with PaulsOfAngel.com. You like how I play guitar? Woo! Thank you again. Thanks, Eric. We appreciate your help today. And it's good to have you aboard with us. This is Dan Sheridan. This is PaulsOfAngel.com. We're part of Cross and Throne Ministries. You can go to PaulsOfAngel.com. And just a few announcements. Get a copy of the Concordant Literal New Testament from us and the Concordant Commentary. If you have these two tools, you'll be having more truth than you'll get in a seminary the rest of your life. And you might say that might sound like an exaggeration, but it's true. A lot of good stuff in the Concordant version, best Bible translation ever. Guaranteed. Well, we thank you for joining us. Today we're going to talk about God's unemployment agency. I know we're living in a time, so this is 2009 when this is broadcasted, and the economy's pretty poor. But first of all, let me just remind everyone, God didn't die. He's still alive and well. And even though the economy's bad, God's still alive and well. And he's a great God. And Abraham had to experience a famine in the land. Remember that. And it was all part of God's purposes. And so we can rest assured that nothing... God's not up in heaven biting his nails or even concerned about the issue. So, I know some of you out there may be without work, but we sympathize with that, and I don't want to sound... I've been out of work many times, actually, and we're all struggling sometimes to pay the bills. But today I want to talk about God's unemployment agency. And in God's unemployment agency, being out of work is actually the best job you can have. In God's economy... those who work the hardest are worth less. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Romans chapter 4, the Apostle Paul says this, "Now to the worker, the wage is not reckoned as a favor, but as a debt." And I'm sure all of you agree with that. When you work, say you work a 40-hour week or whatever it is, 20 hours, 10 hours, 60 hours. At the end of that week, when you get your paycheck, you don't get on your knees and say, "Thank you, boss, for this free gift." No, you don't count or reckon all that labor of yours as a gift. You reckon it as a debt. That's something that's owed to you. You don't go to your boss and say, "Boss, thank you for this free, gratuitous gift." I know you don't do that. You can't do that because... it's not a gift. It's something that you earn. So to the worker, the wage is not reckoned as a favor, but as a debt. Excuse me. Always got to be drinking. I don't edit on these programs. This is off the cuff, as it were. Now, he also says here, "Yet to him who is not working, yet is believing on him who is justifying the irreverent, his faith is reckoned for righteousness." So what does God say here? To him who is not working. Let me repeat that. To him who is not working. Let me repeat it again. To him who is not working. Remember in Ephesians 2, Paul says, "In grace through faith are you saved, and this is not out of you." There's nothing in you. And we read here, to him who is not working. There you are. If you are trying to work for God, or you're trying to earn your way to God, if you think there's something in you that's good, and you're trying to display it to others and to God, I pray that you quit your job today, that job. Not your job that pays your bills, but quit trying to earn your salvation. Quit. Become unemployed. And stop working. Yet to him who is not working, stop trying to earn your way to heaven. Quit your job. Quit the job of trying to please God and thinking that your works are going to merit you justification. Yet to him who is not working, stop thinking your water baptism can possibly have the same effect as the blood of Christ. Quit working. Stop thinking that signing a doctrinal statement makes you a believer. Yet to him who is not working, stop thinking that going to church converts you. Yet to him who is not working, saying the rosary can't justify you. Yet to him who is not working, yet to him who is not working, yet is believing. What does that tell you about believing? Believing ain't doing a thing. It's not working. It's simply giving God the credit for saying what he means, for believing what he says, and knowing that what he says is true. So it says here, yet to him who is not working, yet is believing on him who is justifying the irreverent, his faith is reckoned for righteousness. And by the way, this is what distinguishes the gospel, the good news, the evangel, from all other religions. What difference is the evangel of God, as proclaimed by the Apostle Paul, is that it does not require works of any kind. Works are excluded. The moment you try to work for your justification, you, sir, are off track. Now, to the worker, the wage is not reckoned as a favor, but as a debt. Yet to him who is not working, yet is believing on him who is justifying the irreverent, his faith is reckoned for righteousness. Notice your faith is reckoned for righteousness. When it says reckoned, it means it's counted as righteousness. You have no righteousness. And when we believe God, we're not doing anything righteous. There's nothing we can do that's righteous. God reckons our faith as righteousness, even though we're not righteous. Do you understand that? There is no righteousness in you. God reckons you righteous. He counts you righteous. And it's not of works. Now, notice something else. In Romans chapter 5, Paul says this, verse 6. In Romans 5, verse 6, Paul says, "For Christ, while we are still infirm," notice the word infirm. Infirm has to do with being sickly. And that's how God describes people who are living today. Whether you wear the garb of Mother Teresa or Donald Trump or Adolf Hitler, Paul says that we're all infirm. While we are still infirm, and that has to do with weakness and sickliness and so forth. And so Paul says here, for Christ, while we are still infirm. In other words, Christ did not wait for us to get ourselves healthy before he did something. For Christ, while we are still infirm, still in accord with the era, and that's the word for seasons, for the sake of the irreverent died. He didn't die for good people, he died for irreverent folk, sick folk. And then he goes on, for hardly for the sake of a just man will anyone be dying. In other words, hardly for the sake of somebody who follows the rules and customs of society, who's a good neighbor maybe, and just a generally decent man. Normal men won't die for him. And then it says, for the sake of a good man, perhaps someone may even be daring to die. In other words, for a man who's just a good man, people would hardly die for him. But somebody who's a good man, who's beneficial to you, who may be good to you, you may venture your life for him. But that's how man thinks. Pardon me. Man will lay his life down for those who are good to him. But notice this. He continues. Yet God is commending this particular love of his to us, seeing that while we are still sinners. Notice that word still. Excuse me. Man, I had to take a drink here. Got the cold running here. Paul says again, yet God commending this particular love of his to us, seeing that while we are still sinners, still, notice the word still, we are still infirm, still sinners, Christ died for our sakes. If we can earn it, he would have waited till we can become uninfirm, until we stopped sinning. Christ didn't wait till we stopped sinning because we can't stop sinning. He died for us while we were still sinners. Christ died for our sakes. Much rather then, being now justified in his blood, we shall be saved from indignation through him. For if being enemies, notice, we were infirm, sinners, and now enemies. For if being enemies, we were conciliated to God through the death of his Son, much rather being conciliated, we shall be saved in his life. And there's a passage in 2 Samuel. I'm going to grab my concordant Old Testament here. In 2 Samuel chapter 24, I want to read you an interesting passage regarding being an enemy. And this is a great illustration. Think about dying for your enemies. No man would do that. But this is what God has done on our behalf. He sent his Son. And I think I might have the wrong reference here, and I do have the wrong reference. And, we'll have to look at that later. But the sum of the passage is this. It's regarding David and Saul, I believe, but the writer says, if a man sees his enemy, will he let him go free? Well, that's what God has done. God has taken care of his enemies. For if, being enemies, we were conciliated to God through the death of his Son, much rather being conciliated, we shall be saved in his life. And I think I just found my reference. I was looking in 2 Samuel rather than 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 24:19. When a man finds his enemy in distress, will he let him go on his way with goodness? What's the answer? The answer is no. If a man finds his enemy in distress, will he let him go on his way with goodness? No, he will not. Men don't do that. But God has done that. God has saved us while we are enemies. And so I want to stress this point home. And let me repeat it again in Romans 4, verse 4. Yet to him who is not working, yet to him who is not working, yet to him that is who is not working. This is God's unemployment agency. Friends, if you get to a point where you stop working, recognizing you can't please God, it's at that point you enter unemployment. And you stop trying to please him and apply at God's unemployment office, where he gives you salvation freely. He gives it to you without works. It's a handout. It's a handout. And it doesn't come out of taxpayer dollars either. This is God's program for social reform. This is God's Social Security program. It's for those who can't earn it. To him that is not working, yet to him who is not working, yet is believing on him who is justifying the irreverent, his faith is counted or reckoned for righteousness. You and I, dear friends, could do nothing to save ourselves. That's why God sent his Son. And that's why Christ shed his blood, died on that cross, gave up his life. He was crucified in a horrible way. He was entombed in a grave, in a cave afterwards. They entombed him, rolled the stone in front of the cave. And there he lay for 3 days. And then he rose again from the dead. His resurrection, he was roused up. And that proves that what he did was enough. And if he did all the work, let him do it. And you stop working. Stop working. Stop trying to employ yourself to please God, to try to earn his favor. Instead, quit that job. Go on unemployment. Stop working. Yet to him who is not working, yet is believing on him who is justifying the irreverent, his faith is reckoned for righteousness. Let me repeat it again. To him who is not working, 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 yet is believing on him who is justifying the irreverent, his faith is reckoned for righteousness. What a gift. Have you thanked God for it? This is Dan Sheridan, and this is Paul's Evangel. Our web address, paulsevangel.com. We are part of Cross and Throne Ministries. Again, our web address, paulsevangel.com. Go on there, everyone. Get a copy. Oh, we're at the end. Get a copy of the Concordant Literal New Testament and the Concordant Commentary. Great tools. Again, that's paulsevangel.com. Go out today, friends. Have a smile on your face. Happy is the one who's justified. See you next time.